Former President Donald Trump was arraigned in a New York courtroom today on 34 felony charges of falsifying business records. The charges stem from Trump's alleged cover-up of a hush money payment to an adult film actress in 2016. He entered a plea of not guilty on all counts. It's the first time a former U.S. president has faced criminal charges. Police presence was heavy in and around the courtroom. Outside, a few hundred protesters, including earlier in the day, Republican Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene demonstrated in support of Trump, along with some counter-protesters. We're talking about what we learned today, what to expect next, and some of the political reaction. And you can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about the legal aspects, maybe the nuances of this case, how things work in these charges against the former president? How are you feeling about a former president being charged with these crimes? If you voted for Donald Trump in the past, does this case sway your feelings about voting for him again, one way or the other? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Schultz is a professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He's author of the book Politainment, The 10 Rules of Contemporary Politics. David, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me again.
I understand you've had a chance to read through the complaints since they were released earlier today. What did you learn there?
What I learned was something quite interesting here is that keep in mind that she's not being charged with making a hush money payout. Right. What he's being charged with here is 34 counts under New York state law where it's basically business fraud. And what the legal argument is that when he made the payments to Stormy Daniels and another person, what he did was to try to conceal those payments through the Trump Organization by falsely listing them as payments for legal services or for other types of activities, but mostly legal services. So at the end of the day, what the Manhattan County DA is saying is that under New York state law, if you are committing a state crime, and the state crime here was illegally promoting a candidate for office, if you're doing something illegal, then try to cover it up, we can charge you under New York state fraud laws for the fraud that occurred. And here, the reason why it's 34 counts is that Trump, through Michael Cohen, made multiple payments, not one check, but multiple payments and multiple false entries in business books in order to conceal that payment.
Now, I'm going to read from the counts here. Now, this is a phrase that appears in many of these counts,
right,
that the defendant, and I'm quoting here, with intent to defraud and intent to commit another crime and aid and conceal the commission thereof, made and caused a false entry in the business records of an enterprise. Now, this seems key to me, David. I'm not a law talking guy, but if it was without that intent to deceive and it's just a false entry, I believe that would be something you could charge as a misdemeanor. That other crime, that covering up another crime or intent to commit another crime is a big part of this and why it can be charged as a felony. Do I have this right?
Exactly. You have it correct here. I don't want to use the old phrase that sometimes it's not the deed, but it's the effort to conceal the deed, or not the crime, but the cover up, to use an old phrase here. That's exactly what's going on here, is that it was the cover up that is really the problem here. It was the effort to try to hide the fact that this underlying payment was being made to essentially to Stormy Daniels and so forth. That's really a big problem here. So that's that ratchets it from a misdemeanor to a felony. And just so people understand, under New York state law, a felony under New York state statute 175, it is punishable up to 4 years in prison. So we're now looking at 34 counts, each of which carry a maximum of 4 years in prison. Now, does that mean if he were convicted, it's going to be 4 times 34? Unlikely it would be that, but these are a lot of charges for felony fraud.
Now, this seems like a potential weakness in the case, David. For that just misdemeanor charge, it seems like fairly easy to prove, if this isn't what former President Trump did, prove that he made false statements. But if it's to cover up a crime, and this was something that reporters asked the prosecutor here afterwards, he's not being prosecuted for those crimes that he's alleged to have covered up. So there's a chicken or egg thing. Do you see that as a potential line of attack from the former president's defense?
That is potential, and that's one of the things. It was my law students that we were talking to about this today as we were watching it and reading it through, is that you don't have to prove the primary crime, that is a federal violation or a state violation, New York State violation of election law, in order to be able to charge with the fraud here. That seems counterintuitively odd, but my understanding of New York State law, fraud law, and this is actually one of the statutes that I teach in one of my classes here, is that it's fairly commonplace to use this type of ratcheting up, even though you don't have to prove that the primary violation actually the person is guilty of. It seems very odd to me, but the courts have upheld that.
Talking to Dave Schultz from the law school at the University of Minnesota, looking at today's arraignment of former President Trump. Let's go to your calls at 800-642-1234. Connie is with us in Portage. Connie, hello. What do you think?
Well, I'm very excited. I've been waiting 6 years for somebody to make him accountable for something. And so I'm just hoping, but I'm sort of afraid that he's going to get away with it again. I don't know why. I don't know how he can escape 34 counts. I think he has to be – they have to charge him with something. But anyway, I'm very excited that they're finally doing something about him.
Connie, thanks a lot for the call. These are not, I think, slam dunk charges, David, if this goes to trial. I, for one, wouldn't put a lot of money on it going one way or the other. Connie is worried that the president wouldn't be convicted here.
That's a concern. Remember, we should always start with the presumption in our society of innocence until proven guilty. Donald Trump deserves the exact same presumption. We're going to have to see the actual evidence as it unfolds when the trial occurs. It's sounding like the trial might not be for about 9 months from now. But if I want to make Connie feel a little bit happier and try to stay neutral on this, if you go and download the statement of facts, and I believe it's paragraph 41 where it says, in talking about the underlying, you know, payoffs here, it says, ultimately, the other participants in the scheme admitted that the payoffs were unlawful. My students and I agree that in the statement of fact, paragraph 41 is incredibly critical, because here you have the admission of the underlying crime. So if you're worried about that linkage, there you have it there. On top of which, again, as I'm starting to look at some of the evidence as it's being unfolded here, again, this was not one check that was being cut. It was multiple checks over many months. And so, again, still not going to say that it's a slam dunk, because it's not, and not a problematic case. But as I'm reading it through and listening to Bragg this afternoon, as the prosecutor, it sounds like they have quite a bit of evidence at this point. It's obviously going to go up to a jury, and I think it's going to be interesting, especially if Donald Trump testifies. How's a jury going to view Donald Trump, Michael Cohen? I don't know if Stormy Daniels is going to testify. I think that becomes interesting in terms of who believes whom.
Thanks for that call. Jeff joins us now in Superior. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. I, like you, I'm listening intently to the evidence and everything that's presented. And myself, I support Trump. I think what he did was not illegal. And if I was serving on a jury, the way I see this is he paid his lawyer fees. And there's nothing illegal about paying your lawyer fees. Thank you.
Jeff, thanks for the call. David.
Yeah, I think it's a good observation. I think part of what this case is going to hinge upon is that, was he paying legitimate legal fees, or did he conceal another crime by describing this as legal fees? And that's what we're going to have to see the evidence as it unfolds. And unless that caller who just called in happens to be a Manhattan County resident, he won't be on the jury. I won't be on the jury, of course. It's going to be eventually, what do the jurors sitting in this box, what evidence do they see, and how they're going to weigh it. And I think that's critical. So I think the caller is absolutely correct that it's going to hinge upon what was this payment really for, and can we believe Trump or Cohen, or whom can we believe, and what kind of documents are there? That's why we have trials.
Jeff, thanks for the call. We're talking to David Schultz, political scientist at Hamline University, law professor at the University of Minnesota, looking at the criminal charges facing former President Trump, his arraignment in court earlier today. You can join in with your reactions, your questions about how this all works at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with David Schultz from Hamline University and the University of Minnesota, looking at today's arraignment of former President Trump and the charges against him. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. David, before we go back to our callers, one of President Trump's legal team has said, we're not going to do a plea for a lesser crime, but also hinted that they don't expect that this case will necessarily end up in trial. What are some of the other ways that this case could not end up going to trial? I guess moving to dismiss these charges and asking the judge to do that?
They could do that, yes. They could argue that as a matter of law, they could first say that the prosecutor doesn't have a case here and move very quickly at that point. And I expect them to do that. They could also maybe after they do some initial sharing of evidence, which they're going to require to do. Prosecutor is required under the Constitution to provide Trump with all the evidence that they're going to use. Maybe at that point, they make a motion for a dismissal of the case for summary judgment to have the case dismissed. So I think that's where they're aiming for at this point, is to say that we think there's an insufficiency of facts, or the law does not cover this situation, and therefore we're going to ask for a dismissal of all or some of the charges.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jed is with us in Lacouture. Jed, hi.
Bonjour.
What did you want to bring up, Jed?
Well, just seems like more of the same to me. And the sadness is that the same hasn't been working. So my gut feeling is that if something wasn't working then, it's not all of a sudden going to work now. And I just feel like there's got to be better ways for our time, energy, and resources. It's just really unfortunate because there's very real things happening to real people nowadays. And, you know, the payments were made in 16, the affair in 06, and here we are in 23. And so that's 17 years now. And it's just like,
I gotcha, Jed. Point taken. I think, David, Jed making the case that even if we ultimately agree that illegal things were done here, is this the best use of our prosecutorial and court resources to prosecute this particular alleged crime?
Well, that's a good question here. Now, we can sort of cut it in a couple of ways. One of them is to say that this is New York City. This is where, I think the prosecutor pointed out, it's the financial center of the United States, if not of the world, that if we don't take seriously financial fraud and bank fraud, or rather I say financial business fraud there, you know, what repercussions it have across the country? Because in some sense, the way we can describe it here, take Donald Trump's name off of this, this is just another business fraud case. And should we be prosecuting white collar crimes? I would say we probably should. Now, if you're coming back and saying that so much time has passed, well, the reason why they couldn't bring this case before is that when he was president, the interpretation is a sitting president can't be indicted. And maybe it just took them time to gather all this evidence to come to bear. But you still raise a good question here. With all the different things going on in the world, might there be a better use of prosecutorial resources in this? And I think it's a fair question, and people get to raise that in terms of saying, should they be going after more what, murderers, drug dealers, et cetera, et cetera. And that's a legitimate criticism that could be looked at.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Allison is with us now in Waukesha. Allison, hi.
Hi. My thoughts on this are, if this actually did go all the way to a trial, who in the world could they actually get to be on the jury if they're looking for, you know, an unbiased person? There's not one citizen in this entire country that doesn't have some sort of a opinion one way or the other about Donald Trump.
Allison, thanks for the call. And yeah, in Manhattan, David, let's find somebody without strong prejudgments potentially of Donald Trump. How difficult a task might that be to fill that jury?
That could be difficult. I was going to say, not just in Manhattan, but across the United States, but certainly in Manhattan. Okay, I'm in Minnesota where, for example, about a couple of years ago, Derek Chauvin was on trial, you know, for the murder of George Floyd. And everybody said it's going to be impossible to find an impartial jury because of the pretrial coverage. And we managed to do it because what the standard is going to be is not that you've not heard about Donald Trump, but are you open to hearing the facts, open to hearing the law, and can you render an impartial judgment based on that? Not that you've heard about the facts, but can you render an impartial judgment here? So that's going to still be a difficult call here, but I was going to say, I forget what the number is. There's probably 4 or 5 million adults in Manhattan. It'll be tough, but I think they'll be able to find, you know, 12 to 15 people who will say that they can do that.
Thanks for the call, Allison. Larry is with us now in Dodgeville. Hi, Larry.
Yes, I was wondering, would there be any type of statute of limitations to these charges versus when some of the first payments were made, all the way up to the end of the last payments, and as far as a trial that were to start, is there any type of time limit for that stuff?
Larry, thanks for the call. My understanding, David, in New York is the clock kind of stops on statute of limitations for someone who's living out of state for a while, say at the White House. Do you see statute of limitations coming up here?
I do not see statute of limitations coming up for exactly the reason that you pointed out, is that under New York state law, it's not until you basically come back to the state that the clock statute of limitations kicks in. And you're right. He was living in Washington, D.C. He was living in Florida. At some point, I can't remember when it was, he changed his official residence from Manhattan to Florida. So we don't face a problem there. And he's been indicted, there's no longer a statute of limitations issue because they brought the charges. And even if it takes a year or so to actually do the trial, we're no longer in danger of that issue.
Thanks for the call, Larry. Tony joins us now in Sturgeon Bay. Tony, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. If he is jailed, which we all don't believe he ever will be, would the Secret Service have to serve time with him in prison?
Tony, thanks for the call. Now, we saw already logistical issues, a lot of arrangements made for exactly that reason in Trump's court appearance today. Could you talk about the questions that a potential prison time for a former president might bring up, David?
Well, first off, it's funny you ask that because my students and I were talking about that today, too. The first answer is to say we don't know. The second answer would be probably, let's say he were convicted of a felony. Given the fact that he's a white-collar criminal, I doubt he's going to Sing Sing. I doubt he's going to Attica in New York. It will be probably one of the other facilities that deal with white-collar criminals, and there'll be ample security there to keep him safe. At least we presume there will be. So I don't think we're going to see the Secret Service at the prison with him.
Tony, thanks for the call. Now, obviously, that's a lot of time between here and something like that even being a possibility. David, what happens next? This isn't going to be over in the next week or two, most likely.
Absolutely correct. So we had the arraignment today in which it was just a plea of guilty or not guilty, not guilty. They were not allowed, that is the Trump attorneys, to be able to file any motions. Look to see a couple of things happening. The first thing will be meeting with the prosecution to lay out a schedule. That schedule will be for when motions have to be filed, such as dismissal of the case. It'll be for when the prosecution has to turn over evidence. It will be about all the pretrial matters and pretrial hearings that will occur. So that's going to start to unfold over the next few weeks. Again, I heard something at some point where during the course today, maybe you heard the same thing that I did, that the anticipation is the trial probably would not be for about a year. And that's about average that what we would say for most trials in the United States is that from time of arraignment to an actual trial, it could take 6, 9 months or a year. And if we do some calendar here now, that would put us, let's say it's a year, around March or April of 2024. That's in the middle of the primary season. And I was going to ask here, I'm guessing that the presidential primary in Wisconsin next year is probably somewhere around, what, April or something like that.
I haven't looked at the calendar. David, as we wrap up, I mean, the payments, as we learned from the Michael Cohen conviction, were made so that Stormy Daniels didn't tell her, make her allegations in the run-up to a presidential election. We could end up with Stormy Daniels under oath in a public court hearing in the middle of the primaries talking about that very thing. Your thoughts on that in our last minute?
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, she could be testifying regarding, well, basically, potentially an extramarital affair that she had with Donald Trump about the payouts. And this is going to be the issue when they have a trial. Let's say Donald Trump does testify. You have Trump testifying, say, no, I didn't do this. Stormy Daniels is going to say yes. Michael Cohen, who is Donald Trump's attorney, is going to say something else. As a jury, how do you weigh all these competing he said, she says, et cetera, to make a decision? That is going to be a tough job, I think, for a jury.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you to the audience.
That's David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He talked to us about what we learned today about the charges against former President Donald Trump and what we can expect next in the case.